Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again, and I hope the content today will prove beneficial. As we normally do when we start off, we conclude the rest of the disclaimer to indicate that just because you hear a strategy or two on this show or on a podcast or on a website, however you hear it from us, I'm going to suggest to you that you should always check with your existing advisors, tax, legal, investment, real estate, etc., and explain to them what you thought you heard. Hopefully they'll know whether or not you heard it correctly, and more importantly, they'll know whether or not it might apply to make your future wealth creation greater. And for those of you that don't have advisors, feel free to go to our website at baplanner.com, and top right side of the navigation links, the second from the right, is a forms link. If you could go to that page and complete at least step one of that four-step series of forms, it would be very helpful for us to learn more about your specific facts and circumstances. And if you really get ambitious, or if you're wanting help with us working with you on using your retirement funds, please fill out at least the next, you know, step two form, and then it'd be great if you could do the remaining two if they both apply. Let's see. I guess we can talk news now. And for those of you that listen each week, you know that we kind of use the news to explain or to highlight what's going on in the commercial real estate space, which is where most of our clients are invested these days, typically in the multifamily market with real estate private partnership syndications. And there's a lot of money still being made. You just got to make sure you're in the right transactions. I guess that's easier said than done, but there's no question there are certain locations, certain lead partners, certain properties, etc., that are still very desirable, making money for their owners. And our goal is to help you as you consider investing in specific transactions, is having us look and make sure you understand what you're signing up for. There's a lot to understand in the stack of documents that you'll be given to review on each transaction. Hopefully you get them in advance, although occasionally we see some syndicators that get the cart before the horse. And I would just tell you, if you are executing documents, giving a chunk of your money to a syndicator or lead partner, whatever you would like to call that role, before you've read the private placement memorandum, taken a look at the operating agreement, perhaps the projections. And I understand nobody can read the future, but, you know, we can certainly take a look at the assumptions that were employed to do those projections and tell you whether or not they're rational, given what we know about certain markets, certain sub-markets, et cetera, around the country. So helping you understand what you're signing up for is at base what we do over and beyond tax planning and some tax compliance or tax preparation work. And so anyway, if you have questions about your situation, feel free to call us. Or you can text us here on the air today, or text us after we're off the air, 713-581-0195 is that number for texting. So now let's go to the news, and you can follow along with the articles that I'll be discussing at our BA Planner Show. It's a companion site to the BAPlanner.com site. And if you go to the resources page, and on that link, you'll see news. And if you'll click that, that will take you to our collection of this week's articles and prior weeks, for that matter. And I'm not going to discuss all of these. I went a little bit crazy with the number of articles we put up. I don't think we'll have time today, but in any event, we can come back to some of these on our Sunday show. If you're in the Houston market, if you're in Phoenix or San Bernardino, Riverside, L.A., or San Antonio, or Seattle, you'll need to check the homepage at baplannershow.com to see what time the show will air in your area here following today. So let's see. The first article that I want to take a look at is the Houston multifamily pipeline gushes. Rents are still trending up. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I can't remember if we've talked about it here in 2024 yet, but in any event, according to Berkadia, Berkadia is a commercial real estate data gathering source. They produce white papers, things of this nature, among other things. And they indicate that developers are expected to deliver 21,500 apartments to the market this year, 2024. That's the largest number of single-year deliveries since 2017, and the occupancy rates are expected to be affected, not terribly. It says they'll still be, they'll dip to 92% or so. That's a decrease of only 50 basis points year over year. That's not bad when you're adding that many units. That's let's see, if I recall correctly, Houston's got 600,000 or so apartments. And so if you figure, let's see here, I can't do that in my head this late at night over here for me. I'm 13 hours around the world. Let's see, if we take 21.5 divided by 600, it's about a 4% increase in inventory. And so you're going to need a pretty good absorption number to not affect the market. So I think the likelihood is we'll probably, even though they're saying the rents are still going to be strong, we'll keep an eye on that. It says that 2023 overall was a positive year for Houston multifamily, and part of the reasoning there is that Houston was one of the few, maybe even only, major metros that saw a positive rental growth over the course of 2023. So absorption was good, is what that tells us. We ended the market, or we ended the year with about 1% rent growth, which was above a lot of the markets, according to Joey Ripple or Rappel, of Mercatus Houston office. Half of the major metros saw effective rental rates decline last year. The rate is expected to increase by over 2024, potentially reaching a fourth quarter rate of almost $1,400. Again, these are all average rental rates, and you know what we say about average. Nobody's average. We're all normal, or all actual, depends on which metric you're looking at. The strength of Houston's multifamily market is underpinned by expectation of our population growth. Houston's population will expand by 1.4% in 2024, potentially adding 54,000 residents, according to Mercatus' estimate. After 2022's negative absorption rate of nearly 9,000 units and a depressed construction pipeline, last year marked a rebound, even while the rest of the country reeled from deflated growth. The multifamily construction pipeline decreased 53% nationwide. Pretty significant. But Houston bucked that trend with a 40% increase in deliveries between 2022 and 2023. However, distress continues bubbling up. Over one-third of Houston's multifamily properties were designated as, quote, criticized, end quote, going into 2024, according to TREP. TREP is a group that monitors debt and health of the multifamily loan pool, and they have had Houston on their critical list for a while, and so I don't have their current report handy, but perhaps I can find that before Sunday. There's been headlines about Houston, but I would say we're in the same position as all the major metros across the country. Everybody's feeling the pain from higher interest rates. And truthfully, there have been more than a couple foreclosures to date, or properties that were given back to the lender on a deed in lieu, or deed in lieu of trust. One thing Houston has not, or has experienced that not many other major metros have, is the insurance increases, which I'm not sure about that. The Mercatia person here says, we've had clients whose insurance premiums have gone up 150%. I know of some Houston clients we have that are in transactions that have gone up 300%. So I'm going to tell you 150% would look pretty good in those cases. Putting a major strain on cash flows is an understatement, and contributing to the status of the, quote, criticized loans. And the distribution flow has been trimmed significantly because of not only the health, or I'm sorry, not only because of the property insurance premium increases, but the property taxes have also played in to that. But in any event, the I just found the article on the critical list of loans that Tripp put out. This was a couple weeks back. Let's see. Above 6 on a scale of 1 to 9 constitutes a criticized loan, while 9 indicates default. About 38% of the multifamily loans in Houston are criticized. Again, put quotes around that. A record high for the Bayou City, outpacing its previous record of 36% that occurred back in the second quarter of 2017. Houston's share is head and shoulders above second place Phoenix, where 18% of loans are criticized. So that's less than half of Houston. I don't think that's a distinction we really like now, is there? It's not one we want, but anyway. And I will point out, in fact, the last or one of the last paragraphs on this article comes back and says, while Houston outpaced other cities in criticized loans, it lagged behind in actual defaults. So, you know, I guess we'll take that as a positive. That's definitely better than the alternative there. In any event, let's go ahead. We're about 5 minutes past when we would normally take a break. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word up to the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Big dreams.
Big
big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we're just going through the list of news articles that we have out on our BAPlannerShow.com site on the resources page. And if you go to the resources page, it's actually one level down on news. And I wanted to mention, let's see, let's go down to the article about the IRS got $80 billion to help people. That would be assist people and chase rich tax avoiders. Here's how it's going. For those of you that may recall, it was, let's see, the Inflation Reduction Act, I believe that was May 2023, and the IRS commissioner had just changed. Danny Werfel had become the new commissioner, and he was welcomed with an $80 billion increase added to his budget. The IRS was shrinking even as the U.S. population was growing, and the new money was part of a rebuilding project. And this article, by the way, is fairly rosy, I guess, positive about the impact of the money and how it's being used, etc. I'm not so sure that most practitioners would agree. I think there's still the issue of, you know, just because you throw more money and provide more jobs or at more jobs, that doesn't mean you've got any sort of a baseline on quality. And, you know, when just the way the interview asks the questions, there's one question, the first question, or at least the highlight of the interview that was pulled for this article, some of the money you got has gone for hiring people who are going to help taxpayers filing. Can you measure the difference that this has made so far? Well, you know, in the few months that, I mean, by the time the money actually was in their coffers where they could spend it, and by the time they could start interviewing and hiring, I mean, they've added, according to Werfel here, the commissioner, we've hired more than 5,000 new customer service representatives. That means we are now at a point where our call centers are fully staffed, our walk-in centers around the country are fully staffed. These same people that are answering the phones and meeting with taxpayers, they also process paper returns that come in. Okay, well, that explains a few things. So we're able to manage our paper inventory so much better. I don't understand where the bureaucrats get these answers, but I'll promise you, if any of you have had calls into the IRS over the last several months, you would probably disagree with that statement. And if you're one of several of my clients that have filed a paper return that has been in the IRS's hands for multiple months, you're probably not going to say that they're managing their paper inventory so much better. Or maybe you're a filer that got a notice from them and they're asking for a piece of information and you sent it in weeks ago and you still don't have any resolution. Or maybe you're one of a client I had on some payroll tax deposit money that the IRS wouldn't even acknowledge. They said they never even got the quarterly payroll tax report, even though we've got a FedEx wave bill that was signed for on their end that says they did. And this is like the third or fourth client. It's so frustrating because there's nothing, if they don't show they have the return in their system, there's nothing they can do. And it's just, I can't tell you, it's beyond frustrating. But in any event, so I don't know. I'm going to dispute that this money has really done much of anything thus far. That's not to say that it won't. They haven't upgraded technology to any extent that I've heard or read. So in any event, they've got their work cut out for them, and I'm not sure how much patience Congress and the American public are going to be willing to give them. And of course, they're doing some things to kind of buy some goodwill. There's a new project that IRS is piloting this year to allow free electronic in-house direct filing of tax returns. This would allow taxpayers to avoid paying a company like TurboTax or H&R Block for their tax prep software. They would just do it right through the IRS. Remember those words. They'll do it right through the IRS. I don't think people will be best served by doing it right through the IRS, although maybe on a simplistic return, and that's all that are going to be allowed, at least for now. But, you know, I don't know too many CPAs that wouldn't give the IRS their blessings to do them all. Why stop with the simple ones, right? Let's get you involved on the complicated ones, the ones that have multiple K-1s and QBI issues. And, you know, why stop with the simple ones? And in any event, that trial, I believe, is actually... Let's see, is it already out of the gate? I think it is. But in any event, I would tread lightly. I don't think there's a problem paying H&R Block what they charge to get a return. Probably it's going to be done more correctly than the alternative here in this case. Okay, so I think... in general, you know, the IRS commissioner is saying they're using the money wisely. I did have one other point. They have, I'm going to read this verbatim so I don't screw this up. As you'll recall, they made a big deal out of how much money they were going to be able to collect from the wealthy. And so, Commissioner Werfel says they've created a high-risk list of 1,600 millionaires and billionaires who owe back taxes. And you millionaires and billionaires, you know who you are out there. And we've put in a laser-focused effort to collect that money. And the new resources under the Inflation Reduction Act help us to do that, and we're working our way through that list. In just several months, we've collected nearly $200 million in back taxes, and we're not even through the list yet. So that demonstrates to you just how much money is out there that is owed to the IRS. People want to know that the IRS is doing its part so that everyone is paying what they owe, regardless of their income level. Very assuring words, and I'd have to go back and look. I don't think $200 million was anywhere near as much as what they were saying was out there, but I may be wrong, and I guess truthfully they say that they're not even through the list yet. So I guess there's still more to come. But anyway. Okay, well, let's go on to another article. Let's look at the tax deal likely much more expensive than official estimate, experts warn. Well, Would that be a surprise? I mean, seriously, when have we ever seen a new tax act or new spending act, I should say, that doesn't end up costing more? This is the Child Tax Credit, CTC, is the big driver on the current legislation that I believe it just passed the House yesterday. I don't think the Senate has acted on it yet, but it's also got money in that act, I believe, for Ukraine and maybe something for the border. I don't recall. That's obviously not as big a priority with the group running Washington currently. And they seem to be determined to keep the Russians out of Ukraine, but they're not worried too much about millions of illegals coming into the U.S. I don't quite understand the priority there, but it's just what it appears to me. The price tag on the current legislation that includes business deductions, it is going to retain some of the 2017 TCJA. That would be the Trump Tax Act. I know that must be a bitter pill for the Biden administration to acknowledge, but the $78 billion price tag, which is covered by the cancellation of a different business credit, that would be the ERC, I believe, is the one they're referring to, the collateral program to the PPP loans. It likely obscures the bill's true cost in the hundreds of billions of dollars. So they're basically, they're not able to put their hands on an exact amount under that ERC program, but they're being pretty liberal in indicating how much of that they think they're going to salvage. And I tell you what, it's an amazing piece of legislation on that front. Not just a month ago, the deadline for submitting those credit claims on the ERC was April 15th, I believe. And by the time this new tax act passes, they're already past the revised deadline. This legislation revised the deadline to January 31, 2024. How fair is that? You know, if you were a company that was planning on filing timely, and now you had the deadline yanked out from under you. And I don't understand how that could be constitutional, but that is the way it came down. And I've seen multiple complaints and multiple articles, and I just don't understand. And of course, the ERC has had many, many problems. It's been abused in terms of the filings, and I don't want to get into all the details, but let's just say it's one that needed to be cleaned up. I'm not sure making a retroactive filing deadline was necessarily the constitutional way to do it, but thus far it looks like it's going to stay where it is now, which is now it's too late to file the claim. Let's see here. There's two of the main business credits in this deal that allow for accelerated write-offs on capital investment and research and development. And if those two are extended, it could add more than $400 billion to the deficit, or more than five times the top-line cost of the bill. I want to repeat that. Just two of the credit provisions that might stay in the final version of this act, looks like they will add more than $400 billion to the deficit, or more than five times the $78 billion cost that's been advertised. Now, do you start to understand a little bit the last, I don't know how many years, at least 30 years, when our deficit has just exploded, how we could get there, how it happens? I mean, again, here we go. GOP is running the House of Representatives, and they're part of the problem. They're representing this as a $78 billion tax or price tag. No, it's not. It's $400 billion. And here's a quote. You got to understand the $400 billion comes over multiple years. Well, I don't care if it's adding to the deficit. Doesn't matter. If it comes over 1 year or in this case, 9 years, and I'll read you the detail. Extending the expansion of bonus depreciation and retroactively allowing for the continued immediate deduction of research and development expenses would increase deficits by $404 billion, excluding the debt service cost, which, by the way, we are now over, or for this fiscal year ending September 24, we will have eclipsed the $1 trillion mark in interest expense for the first time. First time the interest on the debt will have cost us more than $1 trillion. Let's see, I was looking here. It looks like the national debt clock, I just glanced over at it. It's now $34,157 billion. Looks like it's gone up about $55 billion or so since we looked at it a week ago. It's insane. Absolutely insane. Current year budget deficit is still in the $1.75 trillion mark. All that needs is a good war with maybe China to kick that into higher gear. Maybe that's the way to get the deficit down, as our GDP goes up dramatically and the additional taxes will work to reduce the deficit. But that would be a figment of our imagination if you think Congress would keep their paws off of the additional tax revenue. It'll get spent. Trust me, it'll get spent on bills like the one we're talking about, where it's a 5x effect on what it's truly going to cost us. Okay, let's go ahead and take our final break. We'll be back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Again, if you have questions, either today on what amounts to the few minutes we have left on the air, or something you would be looking for an answer for later in the week or next week, feel free to text us at the 713-581-0195 number, and be happy to try to discuss that or maybe discuss it on the air next week if it's relevant to our content. Otherwise, I can respond to you off air. Okay, I wanted to mention we've got an article that's just kind of interesting the way sausage is made, I guess you could say, with the federal treasury, and it's called, ways down the list, the most important man in finance you've never heard of. It's in the Wall Street Journal about a week ago now, and I hadn't thought about it. I guess we just all kind of assume things just happen. Things just get done when it comes to the debt that the government undertakes, and we lose sight of the fact that, hey, every bond that the U.S. government sells is sold to an investor of some sort, whether it's a institutional investor, whether it's a sovereign investment fund of, you know, another country, whether it's, you know, you as a single investor, and, you know, the government can't just assume that the demand is going to be either adequate or it's over. It'll be oversubscribed in terms of the amount of money they choose to renew as debt matures. And there's a guy that this article is about. It's called, his name is Josh Frost, and it's a low profile job until Jim Cramer mentioned him on CNBC, and all of a sudden, you know, people are more focused on what this gentleman does. But as it says at the top of the article, the process of selling government bonds to investors needs to be regular and predictable to not have panic or overexcitement set in. And it's interesting the way he does his job. He spends a lot of time in New York as they get close to these deadlines, where he's meeting one-off with specific investors. And he's got a list of about 100 people he says he tries to keep up with regularly. And some investors say they sometimes hear from him two or three times a week. And his goal is to gauge investors' constantly evolving demand for the suite of securities he can offer them. You know, a security to an investment bank is not just a security. They've got constraints on what they can invest in, the length of time, the range of return they need to get, and you've got a value placed on that debt that's more sensitive to whipsawing expectations than, you know, for those folks than it might be for someone like myself as a layperson. Said, you know, that the expectations about the economy and interest rate are two big factors. The structural demand of what will be available to be sold or to be renewed. We control the supply, but we don't control the demand, Mr. Frost said in an interview. And I got to thinking, man, what an important position this guy's in. Somebody that can find a educated way to assess the crystal ball of knowing what is going to be needed, and at the same time not allow a condition where the supply vastly exceeds the demand, or, you know, the pricing is going to go the wrong way in that case. But in any event, if you get a chance to read that, it is a Wall Street Journal article. But again, I've said it before, I believe I've got a paid subscription, obviously, but I believe you can get so many free articles a month. And if you find that you can't do that, let me know. I think we're given a certain number of links I can pass out, and we'll figure out a way if you want to read this article. I thought it's a good article. It's not technical, and it gives you an appreciation for one of the biggest events on a – I don't know how often the Treasury sales occur, but I know it's often. And I for one, hadn't even really thought about the role that someone like this plays. But in any event, let's see. Do we have time? I think we got time for one more, maybe two more articles. For those of you that are waiting on the sideline, that you you're worried about jumping back in to the swimming pool, so to speak, take a look at the BlackRock article. Again, it's down the page a bit, but BlackRock has decided that now is the time to invest in commercial real estate. And they use the example of the period starting in 2022, when the Fed Reserve tightened interest rates, led to lower transaction volumes and declining property values. And, you know, the sky didn't fall after all. And in this case, at least with some sectors, multifamily being one, vacancy rates have remained solid, particularly in the living, be multifamily and logistics sectors. Higher construction costs and interest rates, as well as tighter lending conditions, will likely keep the number of development projects low. And, you know, we started off the show talking about the 21,500 units being delivered to Houston this year. We'll track that as we move through the year, and I'm pretty certain you're going to see a big drop come 2025. Maybe not. Depends on how many jobs end up coming in to Houston, but I'd say we'll know fairly quickly, because you don't just decide to build an apartment building next week. You know, there's a lot of planning, permitting, et cetera, so we'll have an inkling well before 2025 gets here. But in any event, I thought it was telling that one of the, you know, sharpest groups in the room, I guess you could say, is pointing out that investments after periods of downturns tend to perform well afterwards. But in any event, let's see, maybe we can do one more here. Demand in apartments, or in these apartment markets, top pre-pandemic norms. Phoenix is number one. And let's see, the best performing markets: Phoenix, Houston, Atlanta, Minneapolis, Newark, Raleigh-Durham, Orlando, Detroit, Austin, Chicago, Charlotte, Salt Lake City. We track, I guess, six or seven of those markets in terms of average rental rates, average rental growth rates, absorption, and I can tell you Charlotte is one of them, Austin's one of them, Orlando, Raleigh-Durham, Atlanta, I believe, is on our list, Houston and Phoenix, and then assorted others, Dallas and Seattle. Well, not Seattle. I don't have that on the service we subscribe to. In any event, yeah, it's good to see that, you know, the news. It seems like there's some strong recovery on the ones that actually took a dip. But Phoenix is crazy good right now. They had absorption of nearly 4,300 units in the last 3 months of the year. That's crazy good. But in any event, let's see what else. I was thinking, well, sounds like we're at the end of the show. I hear the music starting up, and appreciate you listening in. And again, for those that are interested in investing their retirement money in this space, be it a 401k or an IRA, please let me know if we can be of assistance. We do a lot of that type of work, and you may be surprised to realize you can access those 401k funds before you get old or before you change jobs. We'll see you again Sunday morning, 7 a.m.
for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.